Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5, for autumn semester 2017. Lecture 23, delivered on November 14, 2017. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 2.
Tonight, Review for Exam 2. Exam 2 is structured identically to Exam 1. You are given 5 questions, you answer 4 of them. Grading will be a little tougher, especially on your narrative. Watch your spelling, your punctuation. Don't give me lists. Don't even write sentences that look like a list. Just give me an answer in one or two grammatically appropriate sentences. No equations, no math. I don't want to see an equal sign or a number. And don't abbreviate. Remember that I'm asking you to write as if you are explaining to an educated audience, but they don't know financial terminology. So don't do abbreviations in your answers, because you'll lose points for that. Now, I'm going to go through questions that I would anticipate you should know the answers to, and then I'm going to open it up for you to give me some questions that you might have about what could be on the test. Now, starting out with some definitional kinds of questions, more the ones you either hit it or you miss it, just a single sentence. What is the distinguish between systematic and unsystematic risk? Distinguish between systematic and unsystematic risk. Now, I might go on in that one. Which one should you expect a reward for bearing? Which one should you expect a reward for bearing? Now, don't just say systematic risk is non-diversifiable risk and non-systematic risk is diversifiable risk. That's insufficient. You've got to explain to me what they are. What does the beta of a security or portfolio measure? Now that's something that's a revision of what I did on that, that's from the first test, of course. Explain why the correlation between stock returns is important in constructing a portfolio. Explain why the correlation between stock prices is important in constructing a portfolio. Explain what is meant by the, quote, market premium, end quote. Again, explain what is meant by the, quote, market premium, end quote. Now, again, caution you, this is not for you to write an equation or an algebraic expression. It's not the, that's the expected return to the market portfolio minus the risk-free rate. That's not enough. You have to tell me what it means. And you can't just write an E of R sub MKT minus R sub F. That's not an answer. That's a math that's a math statement, an algebraic expression. You want to own a well-diversified portfolio. Explain two ways that you could do this. Now, I actually gave you three ways. You need to give me only one, two. What is an advantage and disadvantage of each? You want to own a well-diversified portfolio. Explain two ways that you could do this and give an advantage and a disadvantage of each. Now, again, I gave you three different ways, one, two, three, across the board right there. What is the relationship between risk and return? Now remember, there's an adjective in front of each that I'm not giving you in the question. You have to answer the question with the adjectives. Comparing a young investor in his or her mid-20s, with an older investor in his or her mid-50s. Again, comparing a young investor in his or her mid-20s with an older investor in his or her mid-50s. What would you expect to find about the relative betas of their portfolios? What would you expect to find about the relative betas of their portfolios? Explain your reasoning. From the beginning, comparing a young investor in his or her mid-20s with an older investor in his or her mid-50s. What would you expect to find about the relative betas of their portfolios? Explain your reasoning. You were shown two modern investment decision-making rules corporations can use. You were shown two modern investment decision rules corporations can use. What are they, and what is their relationship? What are they, and what is their relationship? Again, from the beginning, you were shown two modern investment decision rules corporations can use. What are they, and what is their relationship? A twist on one that I gave you earlier, that's a deeper analytic, a little bit more explanation would be required. What is the difference between systematic and unsystematic risk? And which one is related to the expected return on a stock or portfolio? What is the difference between systematic and unsystematic risk? And which one is related to the expected return on a stock or portfolio? Yes. Well, from the beginning, what is the difference between systematic and unsystematic risk? and which one is related to the expected return on a stock or portfolio? Now, let me give you another twist on this one. And the reason I'm giving you these different twists is to make sure that you've got a compact knowledge of this so that you can handle the question any way it's given to you. How is total volatility related to diversifiable and non-diversifiable risk? How is total volatility related to diversifiable and non-diversifiable risk? Now, I'm going to give you a little hint on this one. This review, I'm not giving you as many hints as I did on the first one. I was helping you along more on that one. Now I'm giving you more. Let me show you something I drew before. Do you remember the efficient frontier of all risky investments? This is expected return to a stock or portfolio. And this is total volatility, the standard deviation. That's our typical measure of total volatility. You might want to make sure that you have that down. Standard deviation, you might be able to show other metrics that could show total volatility, but standard deviation is our standard way. Now, remember I showed you this thing called the capital market line. And if you draw that line so that there is a tangent, if you draw a line, a tangent, from zero volatility, which has the risk-free rate, which gives you your risk-free rate, up until it touches, this would be the expected return to the market portfolio, MKT. And then you can form portfolios all along here. Just combine the market portfolio with treasuries or borrow money to buy more of the market portfolio to go out here. You need not ever invest in individual stocks. You don't even need to look at individual stocks. All you need is a combination of the market portfolio and a portfolio of short-term treasuries. Now, I showed you here, let's say that you've got Amazon, AMZN. It is well within the efficient frontier. It's not very efficient at all. So if I were to look at the total volatility of Amazon, sigma of AMZN, you can plot these. I gave you that graphic. You can print that graphic out. It's on my website for my podcast. If I were to look at its expected return, it's over here. The expected return to Amazon is right here. In your notes, you should see this. There are actually two pieces to the total volatility of Amazon. There's this massive piece right here, and then there's this massive piece, this little piece right here. Now put that together with the fact that you do not need to invest in Amazon. You can get the expected return to Amazon by investing on the capital market line right here. This would be about maybe 30% treasuries and 70% market portfolio combined together. It would get you the exact same return as Amazon, but for only this risk right here. That's the key to answering the question. The question is actually the answer is very simple. As a matter of fact, I could even help you a little more. To the extent that you would begin the sentence, total volatility is the sum. But you have to finish the answer. Hmm. My mother's work is never done. A related question. This is actually related. On a financial news show, a stock analyst shows the return chart of a stock and notes the considerable price volatility. It's just going up and down. He says, okay, on a financial news show, a stock analyst shows the price chart or the return chart of a stock and notes the considerable price volatility. Again, he says volatility. He says, this is clearly a very risky stock. Why might he be completely wrong? Why might he be completely wrong? Why might he be completely wrong? A financial news show, you're like, don't trifle with me, fat boy. On a financial news show, a stock analyst shows the price chart of a stock and notes the considerable price volatility. He says, this is clearly a very risky stock. Well, yeah, the price volatility, standard deviation. This thing is whipping up and down and up and down. But when he says this is clearly a very risky stock, as a matter of fact, he's probably wrong. But why might he be completely wrong? I'll even draw you something here to help you understand it. Is that right? Here's MSFT as a bar graph on sigma as a vertical axis. This part right here, Microsoft actually has a low beta. It's a mature company. This part right here, look at all this sigma. This is a very high sigma, high volatility stock. But there are two parts to it. There's this part here that's a very large part of the overall volatility. And then there's this smaller part right here. I think even this picture, a picture like this, is in your textbook. And that answers the questions. I mean, that just understanding that is three questions that I could throw at you, three different versions of the same question. Okay. Now, what types of mutual funds would you use to create a portfolio that could be used in good economic times and in bad economic times? What three types of mutual funds could you use to create a portfolio that would be good in, that would be good for good economic times and for bad economic times? Now, you remember I wrote a chart over here. I put three mutual funds and I showed three different scenarios. It's actually a one-sentence answer. You could go two sentences to be a little more explanatory. But I told you the mutual fund one, mutual fund two, mutual fund three, and how you could do portfolio allocations based upon your expectations of the economy. Okay, now, one last one I'll give you. Now, this is actually, there are four different scenarios. I could give you one of four different scenarios for this. But it begins with the expected return to the market portfolio is not going to change in the short run. Now, that's going to hold in all four of the scenarios. The expected return to the market portfolio will not change. Scenario one, the Federal Reserve increases short-term interest rates. What happens to the expected return of stocks with betas above one? Okay, again, scenario one. The Federal Reserve increases short-term interest rates. What happens to the expected return of stocks with beta above one? Scenario two, the Fed increases short-term interest rates. What happens to the expected return of stocks with betas below one? Scenario three, the Federal Reserve decreases short-term interest rates. What happens to the expected return of stocks with betas above one? Again, in scenario three, the Federal Reserve decreases short-term interest rates. What happens to stocks with betas above one? The expected return to stocks with betas above one. And scenario four, the Federal Reserve decreases short-term interest rates. What happens to stocks with betas below one? Again, the Federal Reserve decreases short-term interest rates. What happens to the expected return of stocks with betas below one? Now, here's the security market line. I'm just going to draw this very summarily for you. Here's beta. Here is the expected return to a particular stock or portfolio. Here is the initial risk-free rate right here. And here is the beta of 1.0. which is the market portfolio, so its expected return in vertical space is R sub MKT, expected return. So in other words, here's your two lines, here's your two points, and there's your security market line through those two points. That's your starting scenario. Now, as I said, this is a short-term analysis where the expected return to the market portfolio will not change. This is actually quite realistic. Even when the Fed acts, generally the market, at least for a while, it has this inertial behavior. In other words, it doesn't tend to change its expected return immediately. But what I am asking you to show me is, okay, here's beta space below 1. And here's beta space above 1. So in other words, these would be expected returns for low beta stocks. These are expected returns for high beta stocks. Now, the first two scenarios, the Fed increases short-term interest rates. So the point on the y-intercept goes up and then crosses through the market portfolio, which that point doesn't change. And then I'm asking you to tell me what happens to expected returns on stocks where they were, where they end up, before and after. And then on the other one, where the Fed decreases the risk-free rate, that would move the y-intercept down back through the same market point. And then tell me what would happen to expected returns before and after. I showed you this in a lecture. Now you have to come back at me with it. It's a relatively short answer, but it requires that you understand the capital, the security market line, and what it means for a stock's beta. Like, for example, at the beginning, here's a risky stock like Amazon. It's got an expected return up there. Here's a low-risk stock like, for example, Target. It's got an expected return there. Expected return to AMZN and the expected return to Target. That would be the initial scenario on the original security market line. The question is, after the pivot of the line based on the Fed's action, where is the beta is going to stay the same, obviously. What does that mean, though, happens to the expected return to low beta and high beta stocks and portfolios? 4 scenarios. Just make sure that you understand it, and then you can just pop me the answer. If you've got it right, it's going to make me happy. I don't have to read a lot, and I give you all the points. If you get it wrong, it makes me sad, and I have to take off all the points. No, not I don't get sad. So make sure you have this one down. I will ask you one of them. I guarantee you, I will ask one of the scenarios. It will be one of your questions on the test. So I've given you, I've given you candy. That's why they call me Pizza Hut. I deliver. I've given you way too much help here. You ask me questions. Go ahead. Make my day. Yeah. No. I'm glad you asked that. I understand, by the way. Keep all these questions because stuff will come up on the final exam from this question database, and I didn't even talk about that in this question base. I will not ask about firm versus best efforts versus self-underwriting. I won't ask about that on this exam. I could very well ask about it on the final exam, though. Yes? The final, well, we'll talk about the final when the final comes, but the final is 7 questions, answer 5. And they are more comprehensive. Some of them are just, I usually, 3 of the questions I copy and paste from one of the exams. Maybe 2 from exam 2, 1 from exam 1, or something like that. So they're just copy and paste, especially something that's a really important objective. And then 4 of them are either from the question bases I've given you, or they could be something from the last week of new material on capital structure. What else? Anything else you have?
I've left some holes in here of things that I talked about. Got nothing for me? Okay, that's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.